As we continue to follow the aftermath of Hurricanes Irma and Maria, we're learning a lot about the Caribbean, once a crossroads of trade and colonialism, now a center for tourism. Joining us now for more on the history is Ernesto Bossi, an assistant professor of history at Cornell University. He's with us on Skype from Sevilla, Spain. Ernesto, welcome.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
So let's go back to the beginning, if you will, the beginning at least of human civilization in the Caribbean. There were indigenous tribes in places, right?
Yes, and for that story, we can go back about 7,000 years when the first humans entered the Caribbean islands, right? They entered from northeastern South America, from Venezuela through Trinidad. The standard account speaks of two groups, the Caribs and the Arawaks, or the Caribs and the Taínos. Supposedly, the Caribs were chasing the Taínos. The Taínos, by the time of the arrival of the Spaniards, were settled in the larger islands of Cuba, Jamaica, and Hispaniola, which today is Santo Domingo, the Dominican Republic, and Haiti. The Caribs were sort of settled in what are called now the Lesser Antilles, the small chain of islands east of Puerto Rico, south to the coast of Venezuela. So at the time of the arrival of the Spaniards, these two groups are in conflict, and of course the consequences of the encounter or the arrival of the Spaniards can be described as a sort of cataclysmic collapse. Because of both slavery and disease, the introduction of new diseases from Europe to the Americas to the Caribbean played definitely a huge role in the near complete extinction of the indigenous populations of the Caribbean.
So that was the arrival of the Spanish, but other European countries also came to the Caribbean and claimed their own territory. When did that happen?
Shortly after the arrival of the Spaniards arrived, as we all know, in 1492. Then the Spaniards are sort of establishing a basis in the Caribbean, looking for wealth. There is not much in the form of precious metals in the Caribbean. In places like today's Peru and Mexico, the Spaniards actually found precious metals in great amounts, which led them to sort of abandon huge chunks of the Caribbean. Actually, they called the smaller islands the Islas Inútiles, the useless islands, which some historians have interpreted as meaning that they were useless or less useful to Spaniards because there were no riches to be exploited in these islands.
But they certainly exploited the people with slavery.
Definitely. And there were slave raids to these smaller islands, from which indigenous slaves were taken not only to the larger islands like Cuba, but also to the continent. But in the aftermath of this Spanish turn to the continent, a number of smaller islands were left semi-abandoned, and they offered a good entry point for other Europeans, like the English, like the Dutch, like the French, who first entered the Caribbean as pirates, basically, right? These other European empires, these other European powers gradually shifted to agriculture. Sugar, which came to the Americas with Columbus, slowly, gradually emerged as the main crop to be produced in the Caribbean. And the rise of sugar is very much associated with the massive introduction of enslaved populations from Africa.
How did the United States end up with territory in the Caribbean?
After the U.S. becomes independent, the idea of the U.S. Westward expansion, there was a chance for this U.S. expansion to have taken place towards the Caribbean. A talk of annexing Cuba was constant and somewhat important during the 19th century U.S. Actually, towards the end of the 19th century, when Cuba becomes independent, it doesn't become fully independent. It actually shifts from being a Spanish colony to becoming a U.S. neo-colony of sorts. The U.S. officially occupies Cuba for 5 years or so, between 1898 and 1902, and then through a constitutional amendment called the Platt Amendment, an amendment to the Constitution of Cuba, the U.S. reserves the right to intervene in Cuba. Out of that amendment, the Platt Amendment, the U.S. gets a possession in Cuba that it still has, the possession of Guantanamo, right?
Right.
Similarly, Puerto Rico doesn't really become independent after it becomes independent from Spain. It becomes a U.S. territory.
But how did that happen? How did the U.S. get it from Spain?
Through its involvement in the war. There's a war known to Cubans as the War of Cuban Independence. The war is known to American citizens as the U.S. Spanish War. As a result of the war, Spain is forced to grant independence to Cuba and Puerto Rico, but it's an independence that doesn't lead to the creation of fully independent republics in Cuba and Puerto Rico, but they become possessions of the U.S.
So given all of this history, and when you look at how each island nation has responded to or not responded to these major hurricanes, who do you think ended up in the best situation out of all of this colonization and this troubling history in the Caribbean?
It can be hard to tell. It's easy to say that it is better to be independent than to be dependent on a foreign power.
Although right now, actually, if you look at an independent nation like Dominica, they're probably in worse shape than a nation that has some help from its colonial power.
That is part of what makes this a difficult answer, because it is actually not clear. And you can see that it's not clear in places like the French overseas territories of Guadeloupe and Martinique, where despite the existence of a pro-independence movement, it is clear that the population doesn't want to become an independent country. Something very similar happens in Puerto Rico, right? Puerto Ricans are American citizens without direct representation in Congress. And although there exists a pro-independence movement in Puerto Rico, it has never reached the sufficient strength to actually push for independence, right? On the other hand, as we are seeing now with the aftermath of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico, Puerto Rico is not the owner of its own destiny in terms of acting to help itself, right? Mm. Puerto Rico does not have a government that can make decisions about how to approach this crisis.
So one of the ways that a number of these Caribbean islands are going to work their way out of this crisis and the aftermath of the hurricanes is that they're going to rely, as they have, on tourism. How did we get to the point where almost every economy in the Caribbean is totally reliant on tourism?
The story of tourism as the main economic activity in the Caribbean is a 20th century story. It's a history that has a lot to do with sunbathing, of tanning. That became a fashion of sorts in the 1920s or 1930s. So that's the moment where, not just in the Caribbean, but sort of globally, the idea of beaches as a destination for tourists becomes a thing.
And do you expect anything to change after all these hurricanes when it comes to the economies of the Caribbean, or will they just go right back to tourism?
I think it would be hard for the economies of the Caribbean, for the Caribbean islands, to move away from tourism. But at the same time, tourism, like any other economic activity that is heavily dependent on external demand, it's a very risky activity, because I can imagine many tourists thinking it twice before deciding to go on their dream Caribbean vacation, right? It's another one of those moments in the Caribbean where its future may not be in its own hands.
That's Ernesto Bassi, who is an assistant professor of history at Cornell University, joining us on Skype to talk about the history of the Caribbean. Ernesto, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.